presenting. So we can try and sort that out quickly before the meeting starts. From the NPA side and from the justice side, who is presenting? The team from Justice, who will be flagging the presentation? Can we get an indication so we can sort that out now and issues of audio? We're about to start. Justice?
It means they will not be presenting. Not the... Good morning. We are still waiting for the DG. Can you please give us only a few seconds?
Please. I see ya.
Yes, yes, Fuzo.
From Justice, I'm told that it's the Vim Siba that was deciding the presentation.
Selby who?
Mkiba. I'm just trying to check on the platform.
Yes, but can yes, okay. I see. I'll make Selby Mkiba a co-host and okay. Can he or she test that quickly? Are they on the platform? I see they are on the platform. Can they test that it's working so we can sort it out?
Good morning to the Deputy Minister of Justice, the National Director of Public Prosecution.
Recording in progress.
And to the team, and good morning to everybody who is part of this virtual platform, and to everybody who is watching us from home. Today we will be receiving annual reports from the Department of Justice and the National Prosecuting Authority. We will start with the Department of Justice. Over to you, Deputy Minister.
Chairperson. Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Chair. Can I just report that there will be a point where I'll be out of the meeting. I'm on my way to the airport.
Okay.
My apologies. Thank you, sir.
Okay.
Morning, Chairperson. I'm the department that will be reporting, led by the Director General. So I'm here to assist, but it's effectively their reports. So I'll hand over to the DG. Just to say that at I think it's about 12, I need to step out to attend a farewell for the members of the information regulator. So I'll just be briefly out of the meeting at that point. I'm attending virtually to introduce the officials from the department that are here and to start the presentations. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. DJ, welcome. DJ, Mashabane.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. I think we're muted. Can the Chair hear us?
Yes, we can.
Thank you, Chair. May we proceed?
Yes, you can proceed.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair. Here in Pretoria, I'm joined by the colleagues from the senior management of the department, the members of the executive committee of the department, as the deputies, together with the chief director, and the other colleagues will be joining us from another room as well to participate in this session. And the honorable members, which is one of the opportunities that given us
there's a lot of echo from your room. This is quiet now.
Thank you very much, Chair, for taking care of this. In the tech was from the forum. Thank you, Chair. I hope it's better now.
Yes, it's better.
Thank you, Chair. I was saying we want to thank you and also for the senior management of the department. Thank the Minister and Deputy Minister for the executive oversight and support that they continue to provide to us as the senior management of the department. I'm joined today by the senior members of the department, the Deputy Director General, the Chief Director, and the Directors in head office. But we finally have colleagues who are in senior management who are joining us from in the different provinces. Will be the heads of our regional offices that are based in the 9 provinces, as well as the heads of state attorneys, the masters of the High Court, as well as the principal family advocates who are also based in the different provinces in our court. We present here the 2020-2021 annual report. And maybe briefly, as the Chair and the Honourable Members are aware, I joined and was appointed as the administrative head of the department, and I started on the 1st of March, 2021. So basically that was the last month of the reporting cycle that we are currently reporting. Now, the report that we'll present to you, Chair, based on the performance of 2020-2021, will be compared to the previous year, as have already been reflected, and given in the overview by the Minister, that for the past 3 to 5 performance cycles, the department had experienced some challenges. So it will be against that backdrop that in the past few years, we have had a challenge of declining performance and audit findings on our finances. So when we present that report, will give a picture of what has occurred in the period in terms of the efforts to improve our performance, but also to deal with issues that have affected the outcomes of our audit. But I thought I should briefly just reflect some of the challenges to explain, which my colleague as well as the board will try to reflect on as part of the continuation from the previous year. One, which is known by everyone all over the country, our ICT is a big challenge. We have an infrastructure that is no longer fit for people in terms of ICT.
even the ransomware, even before we expressed the ransomware, we had a report that it was going to be a matter of time that we experienced the challenge. Because the system that we're using, some of it still outdated. And part of the challenge as well was compounded by the fact that we didn't have an approved structure that has permanent employees responsible for ICT. So as a result, in the main, the people that were managing the ICT of the department were contract employees. And some of them had to be released sometimes in the beginning of this. And I think we did a contract of tenders to basically run our infrastructure capacity. So we had started with programs and processes to rebuild or to build or modernize our ICT. However, we're unfortunate that the ransomware attack happened. But looking at what has happened in the past 7 weeks of the time that we've been offline, it is clear that it was going to be a matter of when was that going to happen. So the approach that we're taking now is that we have completely been wiped off in terms of the system, even though we're back online. But in terms of the vulnerabilities and the fault lines that the attack has exposed, building, take an acknowledge, I mean, an analogy of a building that has been bombed, that you cannot repair it. You have to start removing the rubble and dig a new foundation. So, Chair, this is where we are. We are back online to a certain extent, more than 90% functionality. But the reality is that the vulnerabilities that have been exposed suggest that you can't rebuild on this. You can't repair. You have to have a program that rebuilds the entire system. That's one. Two, the major challenge was that we didn't have business continuity plans. That in case of an attack like the one we experienced, what were we going to do? It is for that reason that you will have seen, and some of you will have received complaints from the members of the public about our services that were not available. Because we did not have a business continuity plan that would have said, in case of an attack, this is how we're going to proceed and provide services, be it manual or otherwise. So in the main, most of the services that were offered to the members of the public from the department are highly system dependent. And so as we modernize, as it's structured by the minister since he became the minister, and this has become a priority in terms of our strategic objectives over the MTSF period. This is the reality now that we have to battle with, that we have to rebuild the ICT infrastructure and modernize. Now, as the previous, in one previous session, one, I think it was Honorable Janji had mentioned that we're in a situation where we're fixing one engine while flying the aircraft. So this will be the case with our IT. And I'm dwelling much on it because much of the services, be it the master services, the services that we provide for the core, are linked to the ICT system. And part of our modernization plan in terms of the MTSF strategic objective is to improve the delivery of those services. But third, the integrated justice system itself and the modernization of the whole justice value chain cannot happen if this department itself, as a core department in that system, is not modernized. So part of the plan is the building of the capacity, the infrastructure capacity of the department, both for internal and external purposes. Internally, to make sure that the department systems and processes are modernized. But secondly, for the purposes of service delivery improvement, the system becomes important. But thirdly, the interconnectedness in the integration of the justice system means that the department is a core department, has to be at the forefront and has to lead in terms of the modernization. So this is the mammoth task that lies ahead for us. The The second other challenge that I think I should raise, for the past 8 months since my appointment, I've taken the time to travel the country. And I must say I've been to all the 9 courts and I've visited a number of the courts across the country. It's the state of our infrastructure generally, the facilities of courts and courts. And I'm sure many of you, as you do your work, you have come across, you know that I'm mentioning, the dilapidation, lack of innovation, and so on and so forth. If you go to a place in Philippi, in Young, I think in Western Cape, you will obviously not believe that that place will dispense justice for us. Now, the challenge with our infrastructure is that we are dependent on our sister Department of Public Works and Infrastructure. We have engaged them. And part of one exit proposal we have made was that the financial delegations that we receive from the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure should be increased from 100,000 exits to 500,000. So that it can allow us to do some of the renovation without necessarily having to wait for capital projects. In some places that we have been to where we have projects that are supposed to be initiated, construction of course, the amount of time it takes just to initiate a project. In one case in the Eastern Cape, I think it was in Dujwa, when I asked the colleagues from Public Works there, I said, if we want to renovate this court and expand it, and I was told just the approval, and that will lead us into a short telling. On average, we are looking at 9 years. Now, Chair, in the majority of those cases, processes and proposals have been running for more than 5 years. And so far, there's no indication of what is going to happen. Just here in our backyard, in the Pretoria Magistrate Court, as you will know, that court has been down more than 10 years ago. More than 10 years ago. That court is operating in architectural infrastructure at less than 40% of its capacity. 17 courtrooms have been called on for renovation. And we are told we are appointed almost a decade ago, 2012 and so on and so forth. But there are problems. You ask and you are told there's a discussion between Treasury and Public Works. And nothing is happening. So I thought I should briefly also just reflect on that, because COVID as well has just exposed that part of the challenge now. When we expect people to be in offices, as you know, Chair, the courts never closed in all the different lockdown levels. The state of our facilities, you just can't have officials working there serving in those in some places that we have with ESCO. Courts can't even operate for the whole day. So part of the backlog that we have also relates to some of these challenges. Because we don't have generators in most of the courts, and that's a project we have proposed now for Public Works, that we need to find a way of having generators in order to allow the courts to operate even when there's no electricity. As you go to the rural areas, it's not only about electricity. There's also a problem of water. And people who work in those courts, even judicial officers, they tell you straight, what are you doing? The moment you run out of water, the toilets and everything gets blocked, and the courts no longer become a place that you can say you will continue to function in. So there again, we have to wait for Public Works to agree to a proposal that we have boreholes at least in the places where. Actually, further to that, I think generally, the COVID-19 has affected the department as well, both in the courts where a lot of the work is done, but even in the other areas. But I think we will not use that as an excuse because everyone experienced it. But we just have to thank the colleagues that even when things were difficult under the five, the colleagues continued in some of the places that I visited, so the colleagues who are committed to serving the people as public servants under very difficult circumstances. And finally, Chair, one part I think that is known to everyone and the Minister has spoken to, the high rate of vacancies that we experienced over the past few years, we have made significant progress. At an executive level, we are only left with two posts to be filled. That's the post of the Chief Financial Officer, CFO, the Chief State Law Advisor, but they have now been filled. level as well with significant progress. But I must say that when we came, the turnaround from feeling of hope right at the beginning of the year will go to, on average, close to 4 months from the time that the post would be advertised to the time that the person reports would choose. And we sought to understand what was the problem in the system, and we seem to be having our fingers on the nerve, and we on the pulse, and we are dealing with that. We are reducing it. Currently, we are able to feel a pulse that is in that financial year will be over and done with the feeling of pulse. Now, Chair, as you will know, you'll see from our report, we developed a turnaround plan. Now, in terms of the turnaround plan, this is a long-term plan that is being implemented, but there's no time for us to wait for the full implementation of improvement of performance. So we continue to fix the issue while flying the aircraft. And my colleague, as we present, will show you the 8 pillars of our turnaround plan. And we think that, and we're beginning to see that if we work around those 8 pillars, surely we are able to the coaches of the department. We are able to pull the department out of the woods. And we are convinced that as we continue to focus on the implementation of those pillars, ultimately we'll be able to have the department get out of the situation it currently is in terms of performance, but also in terms of audit findings. We were qualified as the Auditor General as indicated. But Chair, what we're happy about, we're not happy about the qualification. And in terms of the audit turnaround plan we're working on, we will be strict in management. And we know this is a point that you and honorable members have raised several times, and will be strict and will be able to come back and report to you. But what we're glad about is that even the Auditor General, you may not have said, but I know they are online, they have noted that we have made significant progress in terms of our focus to deal with specific issues that they have raised previously. You will note, Chair, that in terms of the third-party areas, we have maintained the clean audit. And I know that's not the point. The point is about the vote. But also even in the vote, the main area of qualification came from the contingent liability, which, as we all know, contingent is not necessarily that there was a mismanagement of funds. But we do take the point. Equally as with our irregular expenditure, the bigger part of it comes from the previous, the contribution from the previous year. But this year in focus specifically, there, and there are processes for the funds management. And we hope that by the end of this financial year, we'll have arrested some of the main contributing factors to fruitless and irregular expenditure. With those few words, Chair, with your permission, I'll want to hand over to my colleague, Terence Asorope, to take us through the annual report.
Thank you very much, DG. Very good morning to Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee. Chairperson, I am privileged to present the department's annual report to the Portfolio Committee, and I will take the Portfolio Committee through a number of aspects of our annual report. So we'll focus on the performance overview of the department for the year under review. We'll look at the organizational context. We'll focus on the audit outcomes, the strategies that we have developed to overcome the underperformance that we experience. We'll also look at each program performance as outlined in our plan, as well as generally our budget expenditure overview. So in essence, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members of the Committee, we will reflect on key achievements and the challenges that we experience as a department. We'll highlight the key issues that emanate from the audit outcome and the strategies that we've put in place to overcome those areas. We'll look at actual achievements and as well as share with members of the committee our financial performance. In terms of the general performance overview, we had 92 annual targets for the year under review, and out of that, we have achieved 61, which translates into 66% achievement. I also need to break it down in terms of the five programs that we have. On program number one, we managed to achieve 40%. Program number two, we achieved 81%. Program number three, 75%. Program four, 50%. And program five, 67%. Honorable Chairperson, I also need to mention that we have actually made an improvement from the previous financial year in terms of our performance. As you would remember, last year when we came to the Portfolio Committee, we were presenting an annual report of 2019 that reflected 51% of achievement of our target. But for the year under review that we are presenting today, there has been an increase of our percentage to 66. Although I need to say, Chairperson, it is not what we want to achieve, but in actual fact, it clearly outlines the fact that we have actually managed to arrest the further decline, and we're actually in a process of an upward mobility of trying to improve our performance and maybe, get to a point where we reach an almost and above 80% as acceptable. Now, Chairperson, I need to also indicate number of critical factors with regard to our performance overview. I must say that, Chair, although our performance slightly improved from 51% to 66%, we still have challenges that we, as a department, are still in a process of overcoming. But I must also indicate that the filling of the post of the DGG Corporate Services, and the Chief Master, managed to bring some stability in the department, at least for the past 16 to 17 months. Chairperson, we identify areas of improvement, which include upgrading of our information technology infrastructure, a robust audit action plan that is aimed at addressing audit findings, improving capacity through skills development. We are reviewing our policies and processes and aligning performance management systems to the strategies that we've put in place. So for us to address this identified challenge, we also developed and we are currently monitoring the interventions in this current financial year. We're also strengthening our governance structure so that we can be able to sustain what we are putting in place, Honorable Chairperson and members. So amidst the challenges of COVID-19 that we are all aware of, we as a department, we are focusing on areas of service delivery and modernization of justice services to continuously improve the provision of services to members of the public. We are also enhancing management efficiencies by means of strengthening internal management controls. We are also taking prompt and effective actions to prevent irregular and wasteful expenditure so that there is accountability and transparency in general. Honorable Chairperson, we all know as well that the lockdown restrictions impacted negatively in our lives and in the business that we run in different areas. And particularly in our department, it has impacted negatively on service delivery. The fact is that, Honorable Chairperson, there were backlogs that were created in the master's offices, the criminal case backlogs, and other services that we provide in our courts. That was as a result of the rotational system, which unfortunately reduced the capacity at our service delivery points. However, Honorable Chairperson and members, we are currently implementing measures to address backlogs while we are managing day-to-day service delivery needs. We are also intensifying our focus on service delivery in order to improve the lives of our citizens. As the DG has said earlier in his overview, the department developed a turnaround strategy. So I will just give a synopsis of the progress of the 8 areas that constitute our turnaround strategy. And the purpose of this pillars are clearly aimed at improving the overall performance of the department, and they are as follows. The first one is the alignment of our strategy to the identified priorities. Honorable Chairperson, the priorities and outcomes were reviewed and aligned through various senior management engagements, and our different plans are now aligned. That is the first critical thing that we had to do from a strategic alignment point of view. The second thing, we had to put together a macro structure. We had to redesign a macro structure. And the reason is there, Chairperson, is that for us to meet our service delivery demand, we had to develop this macro structure that responds to our strategic intent. And it is now in the final stages of approval. We will be ready to migrate to this new structure once approved, so that we realign and align the capacity and capacitate the organization so that we can be able to deliver on our mandate. The third pillar is the human capital and skills audit. We are conducting a skills audit in order to identify areas of development for all officials at different levels. And the sole aim there is to skill as well as reskill everyone, so that we can all meet the demands of a transforming department. Now, on modernization, as Honorable Chairperson would know, that modernization is key in terms of our CAPEX priority. So our drive to modernize the justice services is central to this CAPEX priority. And therefore, we have started working towards implementing various solutions which are at different stages of development in the current financial year. So we've identified different services that we are currently working on. Those services are your maintenance, trust services, deceased estates, protection order, expungement of criminal records, as well as the NRSO. So all of these services, we are in a process of making sure that they are electronic and they are online. Now, the other element or pillar that we have started working on is to reposition the Justice College. So our turnaround strategy to reposition and redefine the role of Justice College was developed, and currently the college is delivering different courses and some other engagements that are aimed at capacitating the college. And I'm going to mention a number of those areas that the college is focusing on. The first one, for the past month, the college has developed what you call EXCO Masterclass on Change and Resilience. This was done through the Gordon Institute of Business Science, that is part of the University of Pretoria. And the purpose of this engagement or this course was to ensure that we prepare our change process, our change processes, as we know that we're in the process of turning around the department. The second one is the Project Management Masterclass. And it was piloted, and the first cohort of EXCO and MAMCO will be commencing on the 16th and 17th of November. There's also onboard training for interns. And the induction and service excellence has commenced in response to the outcomes of the engagement that the DG spoke about earlier with different levels, particularly our junior officials as well as the interns at head office. There's also a course that deals with the cybersecurity awareness and training. It has commenced, and this one is also in response to the unfortunate incident that transpired in the organization for the past couple of weeks. That was a cyber attack. So it will actually assist us that we are ready and prepared and aware. We are also empowered, particularly everyone in the organization and our colleagues who are in the space of information technology. The other critical factor that the Justice College is engaged in now, Honorable Chairperson, is to create, develop, and maintain partnerships. The college and the National Prosecuting Authority are having engagement. And the purpose of this engagement is the revival and the reinforcement of the prosecution training within the Justice College. And they've identified a number of areas that the school will also look at. Areas such as the criminal prosecution, the civil training, administration and leadership development, etc. But also, not only with NPA, the college is also engaged with the IPIT. There are engagements that have taken place, and the purpose there is to assist with training of the investigators so that we can improve the quality of their reports and so on and so forth. So in essence, Honorable Chairperson, this is basically what the college is doing as part and parcel of turning around this critical institution. The sixth pillar is the pillar we're referring to as change management and communication. Honorable Chairperson and members, I'm sure we'd all acknowledge the fact that as we're turning around the department, we need to create an enabling environment, and that for us to do that, change management becomes key and central to this initiative. We have conducted a climate and culture audit, and we are in the process of incorporating the recommendations of that audit to our turnaround program. And for that to happen, a decision was taken that a senior manager be deployed to drive this critical initiative of change management and communication. Now, in terms of the audit turnaround, the department have developed an audit action plan that is aiming or focusing on addressing audit qualification challenges and assist us to have sustainable systems and processes that will help us to avoid negative audit issues in the current as well as subsequent financial years. And within the context of service delivery, our intention is that as we implement all these critical pillars, we want to improve our service delivery posture. So we have developed a service delivery plan, we have aligned it, and we are basically in the process of rolling it out to the identified service point. So, Honorable Chairperson, in terms of the organizational context within the period of the year under review, I need to report to the committee that for the year under review, the department contributed in improving access to justice by achieving the following. We completed phase 3 of the femicide watch, and the aim of this system is to monitor and check violent crimes committed against our women. We also completed new buildings in KwaZulu-Natal, Devon Point Family Branch Court, as well as in the Eastern Cape, the Dimbiza Magistrate Court. I need to mention, Honorable Chairperson, in response and support of the fight against crime and corruption in various areas, including the issues around the COVID-19 PPP procurement and other related matters, we have actually established 6 new special commissioners transport. In actual fact, I must mention, Honorable Chairperson, that we have overachieved, because in terms of our initial plan, we have exceeded the number. So the course that we have established is 3 in Limpopo and 1 in Mpumalanga, Northwest and Northern Cape, respectively. Now, in the current financial year, we are planning, actually, we are establishing further 3 new courts, and those will be in Qatar, East London, as well as Pietermaritzburg. We will, Honorable Chairperson, also enhance the existing courts that are in Victoria North, Palm Ridge, as well as Devon. I am asking, Honorable Chairperson, that the portfolio committee know that all regions in the country currently have the special commercial claims courts, which are currently operational. Now, in terms of our contribution in improving administration, in the current financial, in the year under review, I need to report to the portfolio committee that the department deployed cashless court solution in 25 courts. We also developed, tested, and rolled out the e-submission enhancement for the memoranda as well as parliamentary questions. We implemented third-party management system, which we normally refer to as Moja Pay, in the 483 courts. And also, I must mention, Honorable Chairperson, that this solution is also, it also caters for the administration of financial management processes at the state attorney offices and has been implemented in all 12 state attorney offices countrywide. We also implemented the SMS notification capability in the domestic violence family advocate services. And this notification, they notify parties on the status of their case. We also updated Master's Web Information Portal to include case information for insolvency matters, that is your liquidations as well as your sequestration. Chairperson, the other critical element that we have achieved in the year under review is the integrated justice system. In this area, we achieved what we refer to as the criminal justice system person integration. And in the year under review, more than 190,589 accused persons were tracked, and 4,502 wanted persons could be identified and linked to the sub-circulation as persons of interest for other cases. Honorable Chairperson, we also achieved the IJS case integration. So a total of 371,593 cases were electronically processed via the IJS transversal hub using the IJS system integration between the SAPS, NPA, and our department. Furthermore, Honorable Chairman, the solution is now in operation nationally with its integrations that are connecting almost 1,144 police stations, and those are linked to our 509 courts across all 9 provinces. We also, I need to mention, Honorable Chairperson and members of the committee, that we also made significant progress on key legislation. We have introduced the following bills in Parliament: the Criminal Law, Sexual Offences and Related Matters, Amendment Act, Amendment Bill 2020, the Criminal and Related Matters Amendment Bill 2020, as well as the Domestic Violence Amendment Bill. There is progress on the development and amendment of key legislation. The bills are at various stages of development or amendment, and the following are the ones that are actually currently on the dashboard. Those are the Land Court Bill, the Promotion of Equality and the Prevention of Unfair Discrimination Amendment Bill, the Magistrate Bill and Lower Court Bill, the Extradition Bill, the Insolvency Bill, the Criminal Procedure Amendment Bill, the Drug and Drug Trafficking Amendment Bill, Amendment of Section 6 of the Constitution, Repeal and Replacement of Colonial and Apartheid Era Legislation, as well as the RICO. Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, the DG earlier has mentioned that as much as the department is in a process of turning around this organization, we are in a process of also dealing with the key challenges that we've identified. There are a number of challenges that we've identified, and key to some of those is the declining performance over the previous financial year, the negative audit outcome, the high vacancy rate, as well as the aging infrastructure of our ICT, as well as the ransom attack that we have suffered for the past couple of months. Now, we have to put in place some interventions that are aimed at addressing this identified key challenges. The first intervention that we have identified that we are putting in place in terms of the declining performance, we have to strengthen our governance structures that are relating to performance information. We have established what we call the STRATCOM, or the Strategic Planning and Monitoring and Evaluation subcommittees of EXCO, with the sole purpose of dealing with, among others, development of plans, quality assuring of those plans, ensuring that our report, being that quarterly, mid-year or annual report, as well as supporting documents, are properly quality assured. We've also put, there are activities to implement the plan targets, and we are monitoring those on a monthly basis so that we put together corrective actions so that we address those areas of underperformance. In terms of the negative audit outcome, because we actually got a negative audit outcome, particularly on the contingent liabilities, we have developed a circular that clarifies the roles of various stakeholders. And the purpose also is to ensure that everyone who is the role player is guided in ensuring that there is completeness, there is accuracy, as well as validity of information that we're dealing with. We also had to review the opening balances of the audited contingency liability register so that we can be able to remove all dormant cases which are older than 2 years. We're also reviewing all new cases that are added to the register in the current financial year so that there's accuracy, completeness, as well as validity. We developed an information shared drive to ensure that all the supporting documents are updated and ensure the validation and verification of information from all different stakeholders are accurate before they are submitted. So we've also established a contingent liability committee that is meeting on a bi-weekly basis, and it is constituted of different key stakeholders. In terms of the negative outcome, particularly with regards to the reliability of information that is reported. Honorable Chairperson, we have picked up that the key challenge that the AGS reported is that our reported information was not accurate when it's compared to our source information. And then that information was not recorded. So we have put the following interventions so that we can be able to address that particular audit qualification. Honorable Chairperson, the first thing that we're doing is we are reconciling the source documents against the report so that we ensure that data that is generated by the system is valid, accurate, and complete, especially after this unfortunate ransomware attack. We're also putting together control reviews at service delivery points, and we're strengthening them. We're also ensuring that standard operating procedures are implemented and applied consistently in all service points. And our internal audit unit is conducting audits to provide assurance on the reliability of information that is reported. In terms of the high vacancy rate, I must indicate to the Honorable Committee that there has been an improvement of our vacancy rate. We, from the 9.6 in the previous financial year to 8.6. And this is below the acceptable rate of 10% as the requirement by the DPSA. So all our job evaluations have been here, and critical SMS positions are advertised and will be filled in the next month. Our department is currently auditing our approved staff establishment so that we remove those positions that have remained vacant since 2018 and were unfunded as a result of the capped remuneration compensation budget. Honorable Chairperson, as I reported on the turnaround progress, the macro structure will further allow for the alignment of those vacancies that will decrease the vacancy rate because those duplications will be removed from the current staff establishment. And with the adjusted alert level 1, we have enough capacity in HR, and understanding is that we'll be able to process our recruitment, and that will gain the necessary momentum. In terms of the ICT aging infrastructure, the department has taken a decision to do the following: refresh the key infrastructure technology from a hardware point of view, do the same for the software, ensuring that the key infrastructure maintenance and support services are in place. And all this, we have made sure that we put together necessary resources, and we are also in the process of ensuring that we procure those necessary services and resources so that we can be able to up and improve our IT environment. In terms of the ransom attack, it is unfortunate that in September this year, we suffered an attack which not only impacted on our delivery of services that are enabled by technology, but it has significantly had an impact in our program to modernize our justice services. However, with the support of the relevant state agencies and industry experts, we fortunately managed to restore certain services within the reasonable time. For example, we restored our case recording, however, with limited features. So given the complexity of the issues at hand, we are gradually restoring other services as well. Honorable Chairperson, we are also making efforts to ensure that any service delivery backlog as a result of the downtime is properly addressed. And in respect of the impact to the modernization program, we will ensure that we implement measures to catch up with the time frame that we have initially set ourselves. And now, in terms of the audit outcome, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable members of the committee, as we know that for the past few days, the AG presented the audit outcome to the portfolio committee. Now, in terms of the Department of Justice audit outcome, this slide is a demonstration of our performance in terms of audit outcome for the past 3 years. And very worrying is the fact that we have not been doing well in terms of our vote account and our performance information. However, in terms of the funds that are under management, the four funds, the Guardians Fund, the CARA Fund, President's Fund, as well as the third party funds, we have been consistent in getting clean audits. In terms of the audit outcome, Honorable Chairperson, as we all know that the department received a qualified audit opinion on both the vote account as well as the predetermined objective. And the basis for this qualification on the vote account was the contingent liabilities. And because the department, we did not have adequate internal controls to estimate the likely settlement amount for claims against the state. And in terms of the predetermined objectives, the focus was on Program 2, which is our big and major program of court services. Now, it was found after an audit that the achievements that were recorded in the annual performance report differed materially from the evidence, supporting evidence that was provided. Now, what we did, Honorable Chairperson and members, is that we have identified those indicators that we haven't done well, or that we struggled to achieve in the previous financial year. And we had to put different strategies and interventions to ensure that we overcome that particular underperformance. And under Program 1, I would like to report to the committee that we have put serious interventions to ensure that we don't have the repeat of the challenges that we experience. Now, on the following indicators, indicator on percentage of significant findings on key specific areas resolved, we have to put together interventions that are aiming to address the audit qualification for the implementation with clear timelines. Indicator on percentage of reported incidents of corruption resolved through the departmental disciplinary code and procedures for public service. There is a follow-up with employer representatives to expedite and conclude the matters at hand. In terms of the percentage of total MMS positions occupied by Africans and women, as well as percentage of total workforce positions occupied by people with disability, our HR component has already started with recruitment process for those critical positions, and there is a concerted effort and focus to ensure that we have those, or we recruit those people that we have targeted to. In terms of the department's reconfiguration and structure implementation, we are ensuring that there is further consultation and alignment that is taking place in the current financial year. As reported during the turnaround progress, we are almost at the tail end of getting finalization of our macro structure. The indicator that deals with number of people that are trained, the workplace is there. The HR unit has commenced and will continue to adhere to the lockdown restriction measures that are in place, but the indication in the plan is to ensure that they continuously train people based on the plans that are in place. In terms of the percentage of undisputed and valid invoices paid within 30 days from date of receipt, what we have done to ensure compliance, we have developed a circular that clearly outlines the importance and the criticality of paying the invoices within 30 days, even during the COVID-19 environment. And that circular was communicated to all members of staff. We also ensure that there is additional training to all our branches, the regions, as well as our offices. And the heads of various offices, the regional heads, as well as the heads of the branches, are now taking responsibility to ensure that the performance is increased to 100%. So we are ensuring that this thing is followed up on a daily basis and payments are addressed as and when they are presented. Now, in terms of number of sites where the audiovisual remand system is rolled out, I need to report, Honorable Chairperson, that the equipment for the rollout of the audiovisual remand system to the total of 18 additional sites was procured in March this year. And the installation was finalized in the first quarter of the current financial year. In terms of the number of sites where the virtual platform solutions, or what we refer to as the video conference, is deployed, we have procured the equipment for the 11 remaining sites in March this year, and we have finalized the installation in the first quarter. Honorable Chairperson, in terms of program number 2, the indicator that deals with number of additional courts designated in terms of Section 55A of the Criminal Law, that is Sexual Offences and Related Matters, Amendment Act 2005-2007, in line with the 2018 Presidential Summit Declaration against Gender-Based Violence. We made sure that the Minister approved a list of selected courts for designation in terms of Section 55. Now, in terms of the number of facilities with term contracts for unplanned maintenance, we ensure that the specification for the appointment of term contracts for unplanned maintenance has been finalized and the specification has been submitted to our procurement process. In terms of percentage of backlog cases on the priority role finalized, we are in the process of drafting the framework so that we reduce the backlog cases, and the consultation with all relevant stakeholders are currently taking place. In program number 3, Honorable Chairperson, particularly under the master's environment, there is an indicator that deals with percentage of letters of authority issued in trust within 14 days from receipt of all required documents. In order to achieve this underperformance, we have done an assessment of backlog, and a plan of action was developed and is currently being implemented to deal with this particular backlog. In terms of number of research papers submitted to the South African Law Reform Commission for approval, we are ensuring that, and actually it has happened, that various vacant positions, particularly even the senior management position within that branch, were filled. And also we are enhancing or upgrading the technology that is used for the virtual meeting so that we ensure that we achieve this element. And also to ensure that there is improved assistance by the officials specializing in some areas. We are saying that we need to investigate that area so that we can be able to find ways of improving that space, as well as improving collaboration between internal units and external stakeholders so that we improve the quality of input. In terms of the Office of the Solicitor General strategy that is supposed to be implemented, the litigation strategy, Honorable Chairperson, was approved by Minister in the current financial year. And the expectation is that it will be submitted to Cabinet for noting during this financial year. And once the Cabinet has noted the strategy, what we are planning to do is to identify 5% of the activities of the strategy so that we implement that in the current financial year. In terms of number of heads of offices appointed, I need to report that the recruitment process is underway to fill the remaining positions. In terms of number of policies to implement the State Attorney's Amendment Act that is supposed to be submitted to Minister for approval, I am happy, Honorable Chairperson, to report that the following 3 policies were approved by Minister in April this year, and those are the State Legal Representation Policy, Management of State Litigation Policy, Alternative Dispute Resolution, State Mediation Policy, and the above policies were tabled and approved at the DG's JCPS committee on the 23rd of September this year. And we're expecting that it will be tabled in Cabinet before the end of the financial year. Honorable Chairperson, as a transformation indicator, we have committed ourselves that the percentage of value of briefs allocated to the previously disadvantaged individuals of legal practitioners must be achieved. In terms of the report, you will see, members, that when I report in terms of those targets, we're actually running short of achieving our target by a percent or so. So what we've done to ensure that we improve on this space, We have ensured that the business processes for legal services and the standard operating procedures are reviewed and approved in line with the State Attorney Amendment Act. And once we have implemented this, we will have no choice but to standardize our operations, I mean the operations in the offices of the State Attorney. In terms of approving and implementing the State Attorney Framework, what we have done is that we established the National Briefing Committee in all offices of the State Attorney. We have also developed the briefing standard operating procedure, and the bid evaluation has been developed and approved. We've also ensured that there is a memo to National Treasury for extension of exemption from Section 79 of the PFMA, and the framework contract has been approved by the minister. So the process of appointing members of the bid specification and evaluation committee is underway. So in terms of the number of legal practice acts sets of regulations approved by minister, there are two sets of legal practice act regulations that were approved by minister in the current financial year, and those include private and vocational training and election. In terms of an indicator on governance structure to lead and coordinate the implementation of NET, that was supposed to be established, we have ensured that the standardization of governance structure is is convened in December for the inaugural meeting so that we establish the NET governance structure. So the members of this structure includes the Department of Education, Basic Education, Presidency, Sports, Arts and Culture, Police, Corporate Governance, and Traditional Affairs, Home Affairs, Social Development, as well as DICO. In terms of an indicator that deals with programs to commemorate the 25th anniversary of the Constitution, so the implementation thereof, we have ensured that we have an approval of the program to commence the 25th anniversary of the Constitution, and there is currently initiated underway to ensure that this program is implemented so that this program can be realized. Now, in terms of number of policies that are submitted to the minister for approval by the end of this financial year, we made sure that because the extradition policy was not submitted to minister by the end of the current previous financial year, there has to be further consultation with stakeholders, and that consultation is currently happening. In terms of program number 5, which is our integrated justice system assessment report that was supposed to be implemented, we have made sure that the following activities for the recommendations contained in the evaluation report are implemented during the current financial year. That is implementing 7 recommendations, crafting a clear and comprehensive plan of action, as well as monitoring the progress of the implementation of the recommendation. Now, that is basically, in essence, honorable members and honorable chairmen, of how we plan to mitigate, how we actually put together mitigation strategies immediately and after the end of the year under review. So there's been significant progress in different spaces, and we just want to ensure that we improve. We just don't leave things behind, because those were things that were supposed to happen in the previous financial year. Now, what I will do, Honorable Chairperson, with your permission, I will then move to the program performance report. That is our performance in terms of the set target that we have set ourselves. I will report, Honorable Chairperson, on program number 1. And on program number 1, Honorable Chairperson, in the year under review, we have planned that the percentage of significant findings on key specific areas are supposed to be resolved. And our target was to ensure that 100% of those findings are resolved. It's unfortunate, Honorable Chairperson, that we all only managed to do 25%. And the other one is percentage of reported incidents of corruption that was supposed to be resolved through the disciplinary code and procedure for public service. Our plan was to do 70% of that. Unfortunately, we managed to do 27%. We have achieved the percentage of total MMS post occupied by Africans, which we have exceeded the 59% target to 81%. We struggled to achieve only by 1% on the appointment of African women. And I must say, only 1%, Honorable Chairperson. So there has actually been progress. We just missed that by 8%. And in terms of the total workforce positions occupied by people with disabilities, the target was 2.2, and I must also say that we missed that by 0.1% as well, which is unfortunate. Honorable Chairperson, we managed to achieve the percentage of the rand value of our discretionary procurement for the EMEs and the QSEs far above our plan. The plan was 30 and we did it more than 100% at 71%. Honorable Chairperson, the issue of the macro structure had challenges because it was supposed to be finalized, and unfortunately, we are, as I reported earlier, working towards finalizing this. In terms of the number of people that are trained per workplace skills plan, we also struggled as a result of the challenges of COVID, the inability of our trainers to ensure that training takes place because of different levels of lockdown. The target was 4,000. We only managed 188. And if honorable members can remember that the first 6 to 8 to 12 months of the year under review, we were actually having serious challenges of the COVID lockdown. And in terms of the percentage of undisputed and valid invoices that are supposed to be paid within 30 days, as I reported earlier, the target is 100. We've actually done 99%. From where we are sitting, Honorable Chairperson, ideally we're supposed to be sitting at 100%. But 99% is an indication that we actually have put the necessary efforts towards achieving the 100%. It's just by a percentage, but as much as that is very important, I mean, I need to acknowledge that the 99%, Honorable Chairperson, is commended from where we're sitting. However, it's not enough because that 1% is also. In terms of the number of biannual reports on the allocated CARA funds that are supposed to be completed, we have achieved it. And we have also achieved the issues, I mean the reports on the implementation of COVID-19 risk adjusted plans. We've achieved the security risk assessment report. And in terms of the modernization and initiatives, particularly on our justice service platforms, we have identified and planned to ensure that number of sites where the audiovisual remand system is rolled out. We planned 18. Unfortunately, we had a challenge in making sure that we are seamless. We managed to achieve the sites where we've deployed cashless court solutions. The target was 25. And we achieved exactly 25. In terms of the e-submission, we have achieved the e-submission for memos and parliamentary reports. In terms of number of sites where the visual platform solution, that is video conferencing, deployed, we identified 12. Unfortunately, we only managed to do one. Now, that was program number one. That was focusing on administration. I will take the honorable members of the committee through program number two. Our performance on program number two, that was aimed at outcome number three, that is increased access to justice. We have achieved our target of the phases of femicide watch, which was supposed to be completed. We have done the phase three, which is the femicide watch dashboard report published. We did exactly that. And we also ensure that number of unreturned criminal cases on the ICNS, which is our system, is actually achieved. The target was to have less than 1,000 people.
You are muted, we can't hear you. DJ, is there any problem on your side? Members, can you hear him?
No, sir, we can't hear you.
Can't hear him at all, Chair.
Committee Secretary, can you contact them?
No, good, Chair.
Members, this has been a very intense briefing. Can we reconvene at 20 past? Can we have a break for 7 minutes?
Sure, thank you.
Thank you very much. Can you alert them that we will meet at 20 past?
Yes, Chair. Noted.
Oh, sorry.
Hello.
My apologies.
Yeah. Sorry, TJ. We have since taken a break to allow you to correct any glitches until 20 past. I think you can also use that to correct any glitches or a comfort break until 20 past. We reconvene at 20 past.
Oh, okay. I hope it's not a ransomware attacker who is trying to get back at us.
Let's pray and hope so.
It's now 20 past. Can we proceed? Can you proceed, DJ?
Can you unmute, please? Proceed, please. Sorry, Honorable Chairperson, am I available?
Yes, you are.
Thank you very much. I was on the slide number 51, so I will quickly jump to slide number 52. Honorable Chairperson and honorable members of the committee, we have actually achieved a number of indicators or targets that are aimed at increasing access to justice, except that we struggle to achieve on the number of facilities with term contracts for unplanned maintenance. We also, on slide number 54, struggle to achieve the target or percentage of backlog cases on the priority roll that are supposed to be finalized. In terms of crime and corruption, significantly reduced through effective prosecution. Honorable Chairperson, in terms of the number of dedicated special commercial crimes court, I have reported that during my initial presentation, and I've indicated that we have managed to establish 6. Now, in terms of program number 3, with a focus on transform faster services, we have actually managed to achieve our target and actually overachieved the targeted percentages in terms of percentage of liquidation, percentage of letters of appointment, as well as percentage of beneficiaries. In terms of the percentage of certificates, we have also overachieved, and percentage of liquidation and distribution accounts in bankruptcy, we have overachieved. The only challenge was on percentage of letters of authority issued in trust within 40 days. Our target was 70. We only missed that with only 3%. We managed to also achieve our target on percentage of letters of appointment, as well as liquidation and distribution, as well as the number of policies that were supposed to be submitted to Minister for approval. In terms of the outcome number 5, about colonial stroke apartheid era justice related to guilt and repealed or replaced, we have managed to achieve in terms of the number of bills and regulations we planned. We have 5, we overachieved another 5. In terms of the number of colonial apartheid era, we overachieved as well. In terms of the number of rules of court submitted to the board for approval, we overachieved by 3. And we had a challenge in terms of the number of papers submitted. We only missed that by 3. We had a challenge in terms of implementation of the General Office of the Solicitor General Strategy. We also had a challenge in terms of the number of heads of offices appointed. The plan was to have 11. However, we managed to appoint 6. In terms of the number of policies to implement the State Asset Amendment Act, we struggled to achieve that one. Honorable Chairperson, in terms of the value of briefs allocated to the PDI, the target was 83. We only missed it by 3. And then we achieved the one on the value briefs allocated to female legal practitioners. And we struggled to achieve the one that is focusing on the state attorney framework contract that was supposed to be implemented. In terms of, we managed to achieve the target that deals with the percentage of reduction of capital amounts, overachieved by 6, and we also overachieved by percentage of high court matters that are supposed to be insourced, overachieved from 3% to 78%, and also the percentage of litigation cases settled, we overachieved as well. We also overachieved in terms of the legal opinions finalized, as well as preliminary opinions of draft bills and suggested bills and subordinate legislation that are supposed to be finalized. As well as the international agreements achieved and the draft bills that are supposed to be approved by cabinet, as well as the translation that was supposed to be finalized within 15 days. We have established the legal ombud as planned, and we also ensured that policy guidelines on the conferral of the senior council status was submitted to minister for approval. We struggled to achieve the number of legal practice acts set for regulation that are supposed to be approved by the minister. We also achieved a number of activities on the net program of action. We struggled to achieve the governance structures that are leading to the coordination of the implementation of NEP. We achieved the funding model for the implementation of NEP. Honorable Chairperson, we achieved the number of anti-xenophobia campaigns that we conducted with other departments, as well as number of awareness sessions of the vulnerable groups, and the Intersectoral Integrated National Information System on Trafficking of Persons. We also achieved the number of trafficking persons campaign in collaboration with other role players. We struggled to achieve the programs to commemorate the 25th anniversary, And also we achieved the review of set of regulations in terms of the basic education as well as the higher education. In terms of the social compact between the executive and legislative tiers of government, we managed to achieve that because we developed that. And we also achieved the number of country reports submitted to DECO for onward submission to treaty bodies. Honourable Chairperson, we also achieved the percentage of valid requests for extradition and mutual legal assistance. We struggled to achieve the number of policies that were supposed to be submitted to Minister for approval by the end of the financial year. Now, in terms of the program number four, Honourable Chairperson, I know that the National Prosecuting Authority will actually present their full report as a program in under justice. What will just quickly reflect is what is, it will be reporting what is currently sitting under our plan. In terms of the number of operational TCs in place, unfortunately, NP has a challenge in achieving that, but they also missed the target by only three. And the rest of their indicators, Honorable Chairperson, they have actually achieved, except on the one on level of quality, except on the conviction rate in those complex commercial crimes, as well as number of persons convicted of private sector corruption, and also number of government officials convicted of corruption, and number of cases involving money laundering, value of freezing orders, as well as value of recovery. But I guess they'll be able to speak through.
We can't hear you again. Mr. Mkiba, you are muted. Committee Secretary, can you contact them?
Good afternoon, Chair. Our apologies. The main system we're connected on experienced another glitch, but we're coming to the point on the expenditure report. With your permission, Chair, can we proceed to present us the expenditure report?
Is he back online now? DJ? DJ?
Honorable Chair.
Chair, it appears we are back, Chair.
We're back. No, I think what I would suggest is that you jump the slides on the NPA. They are here, they are going to speak for themselves. You go to other slides and not cover the NPA.
Thank you very much. In fact, that was the last slide, so I was suggesting to you that we proceed and make a presentation which will be upon the expenditure. And I'll ask my colleague, Sheriff Price, to continue with the presentation on expenditure. Sheriff?
That's good.
Can you increase your phone?
Okay. The expenditure for the 2021 financial year softened to the 95% level. This is compared to 96% of the previous financial year. We did understand in the 2021 financial year was 1,000,000,000 rand. So our understanding was compensation of employees, where we spent under 351.7 million rand. This was mainly due to vacancies that we've got to hold, mainly due to the COVID-19 regulation.
Sorry, ma'am. Do you have a challenge of placing a slide?
On the screen, it says the host has disabled us from sharing our screen.
Can you attend? The committee secretary?
Mr. Chair, we've seen enabled them. It's because of the glitch that it caused that, but we've since enabled the sharing. Can they share?
Okay, can you flash your slide?
Thanks, Chair. Can you see that now, Chair?
It's still coming. Yes, we can see.
Thank you very much, Chair. Can you proceed, Chair?
Thank you. So, as I was saying, the spend was between 95% of the budget in the 2021 financial year. We had an understanding of 1,076,000,000. Our understanding on compensation of employees sounds included by transfers and other classifications. We understood 331.7 million rand. This was mainly due to vacancies on the balance. We had challenges to the COVID lockdown and also implementation of the Aspen Multitude Social and Voluntary Youth Program. This was services to understand the 375 million rand. We also had challenges here with our infrastructure project and our financial leases and leases on accommodation. On drug systems, that was due to understanding of 1,000,000 and 5,000. Balance for capital assets was understanding of 71.8 million, and this will mainly be to our modernization program and challenges with being the manager in COVID areas. Magistrates, we understand of 295.6 million. Now, the understanding that was also due to critical vacancies that were being sold, and then also understanding of these the duties to be less than what we anticipated. The next slide. So, yeah, there's a breakdown on the program where you see administration. We think we must say that a lot of expenses are focused on the administration, which is 93%. And yeah, in the administration against vacancies, implementation of the youth program, we also had understanding on the commission of inquiry that understanding was not able to plan the investigation and legal team at the end of the financial year, and also planning of how pieces and accommodation. With regards to the budget, which was mainly due to the understanding of vacancies, and some of it of public works infrastructure programs. Program 3, basic services, we underspent 95% of the budget, and the understanding of basic services was mainly due to the lack of vacant posts. Program 4, National Prosecuting Authority, the spending was quite high, it was 98%. checking. And on this one, it is the in the modernization. So we had today's presentation of our plan project to adjust the modernization. All my understanding on the performance of the IGSG member departments of their program. Then we have magistrate salaries, as you all know, that she spent 88% of this budget with the executive on the basis of the magistrate. So the next slide shows you the breakdown on when the spending is, and the majority of our spending, as you can see from court services, 31%, is then on national prosecutors authority of 21%, it's a cap we've seen a slide on spending our group services is 17%. Let me go to the next slide. The other spending of departments is EMU's classification. So you will notice this again, so you have to compare to the previous year. On compensation of employees, we actually spent 95% of budget. The previous year was 96%. So we didn't change the system basis from the previous information here. This was like, which is already in place or previously running as an all-cup. The goods and services, we spent 93% of our budget, and the previous year we spent 99%. So we did have challenges in our goods and services budget. The payment for financial assets was 100% in 1920 and 2021. Transfers and property, we spent 99% in both years. And in payment for capital assets, in the previous year, we spent 60% of our budget. So we actually had an improvement of 90% of spending in this area. So again, most of our department preparation is at 95%. So the next slide will show you a breakdown of how we're spending on economic education. So 58% of our budget in the previous year was for compensation of employees. And then 23% went to goods and services. Transfers and subsidies was 15%. Payments for capital assets was 3% of our total budget, and payments for financial assets was 1%. The next slide will show you expenses is not directly linked to our non-financial performance. But remember, we have indicated this to performance, and it's also not linked to non-financial performance. So we have a 32% of our total expenditure is not linked to our indicators. This is accommodation charges. You will see 1.3 million. Security services were 906 million. Travel and subsistence 211.4 million. Psychiatric observation 54 million. And then office goes to the larger ones. Legal services of 182.5 million. And then transfers and subsidies. Our total expenditure on financial upgrades, non-financial performance is 6.3 million. Can I continue to erect the supervised expenditure? Okay. So department as of the 31st of March, the department had 61 cases at the end of the financial year on the regular expenditure. Under determination and investigation. And this amounted to 2 billion rand. 54 of these cases were from previous financial years amounted to 1.6 billion rand. So there were 20 new cases reported in 2021 financial year, with 17 related to prior financial years. The next slide shows the space. So the next slide shows just to give you an idea of the breakdown of the status of our cases. So on the cases on our register, we have two cases of drug and investigation by the Special Investigation Unit. And the value of these cases is 167 million rand. These cases are one is for appointment of counsel by the state, and the other one was variation orders for ICT. Then we have two cases of an investigation currently by forensic audit unit with 15 million rand. Cases under formal disability crisis by consultant, 429.5 million rand. Case of submission for condemnment to National Treasury, your rights to 250 million rand of the cases. Now, in case of any submission for condemnment, it needs the province is already finalized the investigation or the determination. We have already implemented process measures and corrective action. In cases referred to the management for consequence management, it's 32.7 million rand. In these cases where we are submitting the case, we do a determination and consequence management or corrective action has been implemented. We've all inspected the resident manager and follow up to ensure that it's implemented to the next further regulation. And under determination by internal control, we've got 626 million rand, of which one case is 550 million, which we will be providing the fund to the DG before the end of November to finalize the maintenance. Then we're going to fix it and write the finish for the bottom. The bottom has 374 cases to fix the waste suspension under investigation, amounting to 1.775 million rand. In the beginning of the financial year, we had 466 cases which were under determination with 1.8 million. 110 of these cases were resolved or written off recovered during the financial year. A such of 36,553 was covered from official maritime rivals to the waste facility incurred. So this will be when the investigation was conducted and found that the official should be liable, we recovered the debt from the official. There were 14 new cases in respect of inertia to the value of 13,680 rand in the 2021 financial year, which were all recovered or written by the end of the financial year. There was no new crisis reported currently in this financial year. So the next slide just shows you a breakdown of the suitable waste percentage of all the cases that are registered as at the 31st of March. As you will see, the province is actually doing very well. There are 163 cases at national level and 186 cases in total. But I can just indicate the current financial year, we're currently resolving 118 that we've identified is actually not true. So, in the cases above the large measure cases, you'll notice there's one case in Pumalanga, which was the primarily. This is where the court was involved, but the furniture was ordered, unfortunately, due to issues of public works and so on the project. The court was finalized in time, so we had to restore the furniture for a period of 6 months, and these costs have been identified as exclusive. This was in the delay building of the High Court in Pumalanga. Also, the South and Province is one case where that affects a non-based supplier, but we are in the process of recovering the best from the supplier. And then the presentation, DG. Thank you.
Thanks, Joyce. Chapter 7, Honorable Chairman and Honorable Members, I think this is our presentation. We apologize for sometimes having overburdened you with information, but we will deal with other matters that may not have been clear. We turn over back to each other.
Thank you very much, JJ, and to your team. Members, I will now open for comments and questions. I have Honorable Janji, followed by Honorable Swart, followed by Honorable Hall, Honorable Nivot Jaffan, Honorable Dennis Breitenbach, in that order. Honorable Janji.
Thank you very much. Just maybe before I go to the few areas that I want to touch, and I'm trying to come in because I'd like to catch the DM before he leaves at 12 to be able to respond to one or two of the issues I want to raise. But before I get to that, just a request to you, Chair, in future, maybe for next year, if you can assist us in that, because we started at 9. It's a marathon presentation. by the department. We started at 9, Chair. So it's almost 10, it's close to 2 hours we're listening to the department. So from where I'm sitting, we have not started the annual report. Well, they've given us the annual report, and they've used this time for presentation. It's the balance is just not fair. This is supposed to be our time as members to spend more time and get them just answering questions. So I'm just asking your permission that you look into that as we go forward. That's the first point. Don't have to respond to that, Chair, but just something to digest, kind of going forward. The second point, Chair, I want to raise before I go to the specific question, by way of a context, Deputy Minister, this annual report that is being presented here today is a full COVID-19 annual report. This report started on the 1st of April 2020 to 31st March 2021. So it would even have at least 2 waves in it. So there are significance about that. But as you listen to the report, Chair, it says the previous year performance was at 51%. By this department. And therefore, under COVID, this department has improved that performance. It's at 66%. Now, that's curious from where I'm sitting. Quite a number of lessons when I get to the DM that he needs to assist. But even as I get to that, even more other things for the 51% of target performance of 2019-2020, you had a department under spending at least by something like 700 million or so, if I still remember. And then with the 66%, which is a better improvement compared to the previous year, this COVID annual report, they have not put that in their slide. And I hope I'm correct, well, that's what I got from the annual report itself, that they would have had an expenditure of $1 billion. So with an improved performance, Chair, when you look at issues of expenditure and expenditure, this is what it gives. And it makes me more curious. So I want to understand. So they are better under COVID conditions in terms of their performance. You compare that with the issue of the under expenditure. And the question I'm asking, which I'll continue to do even beyond today, is this 66% achievement they had, has COVID kind of woken up a sleeping giant that now is rising? Or has COVID forced them to do shortcuts and tick the box on certain things? Well, I'm interested in the impact and quality of this particular report. And so I was sitting here as we go through this. This is what occupies my mind. I thought I must just give that context. And to the DM, there was... In the foreword by the Deputy Minister, he made this point that things have gotten better during this time, and even in terms of achievement. The examples about the by 31st March, how the regional court, the district court, gotten better, and the key success factors that are listed under his forward would relate to the fact that 1,500 laptops would have been given to the department, and that the virtual cases, when it comes to civil matters, has gotten kind of better in terms of attending to those kind of backlogs and so on. And which leaves the question to me, to him, that if this is what we were able to succeed on during this COVID financial report and annual report, what are the lessons that he can share with us and take him forward? Are we going to see when we meet in February, Chair, in the annual performance plan, that the gains that are recorded as key success factors under these issues that have been listed as the virtual cases and all of those kind of things, are they going to be introducing those in their annual performance plan? So that there's a link between the success and how that success influences you kind of going forward. I would like the Deputy Minister to speak on that. Second, to the Deputy Minister, I'm interested, because my focus is on the court processes, Chair, as you always know. I'm interested with the issue of the magistrate bill and the lower court bill. I've seen the presentation is mentioned in the report. Exactly at what stage is this? Because from where I'm sitting, and he knows that better, that this is a matter that we're passionate about in the Magistrate Commission, and until these issues are tended to, you're not going to get proper performance in that. So that if you can be just specific on that issue. Let me move from their chair and go to the accounting officer. In the report of the accounting officer, which starts from pages 12 to 18 of the annual report. Unfortunately, I'm not going to be... elaborate on the sale of goods with this over kind of 12 million over expenditure there, as well as the fines and the issues of penalties. To elaborate on more on those issues, maybe the CFO can even help him in that regard. I've already touched on the issue of the under expenditure, which is 1 billion. And then, Chair, if I may proceed from there, perhaps that the accounting officer to assist in the entities reporting to DOJ. I'm just interested to find out if they have produced annual reports for the following entities. There's a Council of Debt Collectors that is listed following under this department. I've never been able to interact with that entity. And the best way to do that is to follow its progress and its work. Is there, can I have my hand on an annual report of this Council of Debt Collectors? Secondly, there is an entity rules board or court of law. I'm trying to get more information on that. Is there at least an annual report on that I can lay my hand, as well as the sheriff board, the South African Board of Sheriffs, because these are public funds that go into this institution. And listening to their presentation, the slides, there's nothing said about that. They all one in terms of their performance, the funding that goes into that. So it makes me to be very curious. The next point, Chair, I want to check with the accounting officer is in relation to the risk management issues. That's page 120 in the annual report. I've been very concerned about this. You hear the Auditor General. We press the Auditor General on this risk management issue. And to sum up the Auditor General said that their risk management issue is okay. That's what they said. They were happy. And then our accounting officer, the few things he said up front was that he made mention of this because you have a committee there that meets four times a year, and yet many of the issues that you are picking up here relate to a failure in that regard. I've already received
responses, Chair, on the master's office. I send the lengthy questions to them. I'm not going to bore you with that because the kind of things that are out there, I've got those, and I'll be interacting with those at a different platform with the minister. And as well as I've sent a very detailed question on this issue of this ransomware issue that they presented here. And I'm linking all of these because the major contributing factor is the weakness and the absence of their risk management approach to this. Because these attacks happen everywhere in the world. But the best way to deal with them is how you mitigate and how you reduce the extent of these problems. You talk about the Department of Justice, important department everywhere in the country, that for the month of September into October, its systems were just in a mess, more than a month. And in fact, the accounting officer still says it's 90% complete. I'm not sure. So that's what I said. My question is in that regard. So it is a bad, it's a messy situation. And in fact, I'm not going to work. Some of the questions I've asked there is the role of consultants in that and other things. But I won't waste the colleagues' time on that in terms of this. Then, Chair, perhaps just to go to the HR, part of the annual report from page 139. I will leave the LPA one. I will deal with that with the LPA. But it's not convincing that the reasons for vacancies that have not been filled, just from where I'm sitting, I'm not convincing. I'm not persuaded by the kind of reason that has been put forth for those vacancies not being filled. And then you go to some of the staffing issues. So you've got 420 resignations, which is the second kind of departure or exit following the one of 600 plus of contract. Now, contract, you can understand that the contract is end. But the resignations for the period under review, we have 420 of those, which sends a statement from where I'm seeing that people are deserting this department. 328 around staffing relates to issues of DC matters. And I think that's quite a lot to deal with. Then my third area under HR, which is of concern, this issue of foreign workers, on level 3 to 5. Now this is your lowest level, 3 to 5, in any of these departments. Now, the point I want to check there is, so for that kind of level, why would you need foreign workers for level 3 to 5? I mean, where are South Africans? This is not a specialized area. This is not a scatting. This is about admin officers from our city. So why would you do that? The report couldn't explain to me that in that section of foreign workers, you've got admin officers. Because in that area, we're looking for the kind of skills that we don't have. I mean, with the level of unemployment, you might argue that it's only 7. 7 is a lot of families behind that. And then we've got something called the other category. The other category constitutes about 108. And I'd like them to explain that and perhaps unpack that particular issue. Chair, maybe on follow-up I'll come up with, I've got a list out of that annual report, but for now I want to pause there. Thank you very much, Chair. Honourable Chair Magwanishe, are you there?
Sorry, I muted myself. Thank you very much, Honourable Janji. Honourable Swartz, I was talking to myself. I did not realize that I was muted. Thank you very much. Honorable Swart.
Thank you, Chair, and greetings to all the guests from the department, DG, Deputy Minister. I missed a few of the inputs as I was involved in the medium-term budget. So if I ask things that have been dealt with already, please forgive me. Chair, I want to just also commend the department with the improvement that it has shown. I think there's a long way still to go, but at least we do see signs of improvement given the challenges. I've always mentioned the financial challenges, the budget cuts that the department and its entities have to operate under. And so from our perspective, we appreciate the work that has been done. I ask that you would just convey that appreciation to all the staff members that have worked very hard under very trying conditions. That having been said, I want to just join with what the Honourable Diaki has said. Chair, we need to slot more time, because you will recall in previous parliaments we would set a whole day aside at least, or maybe 2 days, for an engagement with the department, because there's a multitude of issues in the report that we need to unpack. And yes, it is necessary for a lengthy presentation, but that does limit our engagement. And I think that is something we need to seriously consider going forward. It's a tough ask to have both the department and other entities reporting to us in one day. So I'm going to just focus on a few specific issues. And one of the issues that I always but is that related to this, because that is a very, very important role in the state litigation, and I appreciate the Solicitor General, his input, as well as the meeting we had earlier, I think it was in May this year. What I would like to ask, firstly, whether there is any specific outcomes as to the special investigating unit's reports on the state attorney. There were referrals suggested by the SIU that there'd be disciplinary action against certain officials. I think there were two in the Office of the State Attorney. What is the outcome of that? An update on that completed SIU report that is referred to in the SIU's annual report. Any referrals to the relevant prosecuting authority? We might raise that. We don't have all the information. And then also the issue related to recovery of assets through the SIU and the tribunal. You might be able to, as a department, advise us on that. Then allied to that, an issue I always raise, which is of a concern to me, is that the state attorney runs an overdraft where they pay advocate fees, and then they recover those fees from client departments. And I know that is always a challenge for the department and the state attorney to recover those advocates and other disbursements. I'd like to ask the department to give us an update as to the outstanding fees that are due to it, where the state attorney has paid on behalf of those client departments, and possibly we can assist the department in the recovery of those fees. Chairperson, we've also already heard about the ICT systems and the challenges there, and the ransomware issues, so I'm not going to dwell too much on that. The second part I would like to ask about is the Master's Office. And again, the SIU has made certain recommendations. We'd like an update on the referrals made for disciplinary action against officials in the Master's Office, and any other relevant updates following the SIU's report on the challenges at the Master's Office. We've raised this before. We've, as MPs, are inundated with queries with challenges at the Master's Offices, particularly during the time of lockdown. We appreciate that the department and the Master's Office does their very best under lockdown provisions, but obviously this has a very serious impact on our economy when we have challenges at the Master's Office. We also understand that there are increasing numbers of court actions for mandamuses against the Master's Office, which a mandamus requiring the Master's Office to do costs incurred, and we would like an update as to whether that is so and what has been addressed to what has been done to address the challenges that the Master's Office is experiencing. Chair, I'd like to specifically ask about the CARA Fund, the Criminal Asset Recovery Account. Now, as we know, this is money that is obtained from criminals in terms of the Prevention of Organized Crime Act, etc. And we notice from reports from proceeds of criminal crimes with 85.8 million. The cash paid out was 150.69 million. And the total in the account, according to the annual report on page 249, is 696.8 million. If you look at last year's payments made by the CARA funds, the total amount paid was 294.76 million, as opposed to the lesser amount that was paid out this year. I'd like an indication of who takes the decisions as to funds that are paid out. And it's also noteworthy when you compare the reports that last year, 47.84 million was paid to the National Prosecuting Authority to assist them with prosecution. Nothing this year. Last year, 70 million was paid to the Department of Social Development. Obviously, social development can with families and children at risk. Can take zero in fighting crime. This year, nothing was paid to the Department of Social Development. So I'd like to know who decides on the funds, the CARA committee, who is the CARA committee, and why have certain entities not received any funds this year at all? And it's interesting that the State Security Agency received 50 million rand, and again, this year, 50 million rand, and whilst the NPA, Department of Social Development, seems, according to information at our disposal, to not have received any funds. So I'd like that clarity in that regard. Then, can I just ask, lastly, Chair, we welcome the Justice 100 Days Rapid Results Challenge on the gender-based violence issues. And I'm sure it was mentioned previously, but I would like just an update on progress in that regard. Obviously, gender-based violence is a matter that is deeply concerning to all of us, and so if we can get an update in that regard, that will be very helpful. For now, Chair, those are my questions, for which I appreciate the time.
Thank you very much, Honourable Swart, Honourable Werner Holm.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. At the outset, Chair, I want to say that if one listened to the introductory remarks of the DG, and where he in very clear terms said in terms of the ICT environment that the department is actually faced with a situation where there can be no meaningful repair of what is in place after, even before the attack that happened. It is very worrying that while we're appreciative that what we are receiving today is, of course, a briefing on the annual report, that if we accept that context that was given by the Director General, then it is, of course, very worrying that it nonetheless appears to paint a picture of a turnaround, which I think if we circle back to his remarks at the very beginning, we must, I think as the Honourable Jayanti already indicated, be very sceptical as a committee as to whether that turnaround is in fact happening. So at the outset, I want to add my voice to the two colleagues before me and say that even before the attack, unfortunately, in terms of the referrals and the questions and the engagement we as members of parliament are having with practitioners, but also with people who are impacted upon by the lack of services and the slow responses by, for example, the master's office, but also the department in general in terms of maintenance payments. I really must say that I'm very skeptical as to whether the true picture of what is the state of play out there has been sketched by this report. And I must stress that, of course, it all has been exacerbated by the attack that happened, which basically brought everything to a standstill. But even before then, the amount of complaints we do receive about those specific two issues cannot be explained away. And therefore, one must be very skeptical about the green-coded parts of the annual report in respect of those aspects. And then, of course, if one takes into account the fact that the Auditor General said that one of the qualifications it has made in this year is the reliability of performance information as supplied by the department, then I don't think it's unfair of us to say that we are skeptical about those parts of the report, and we are very worried on behalf of South Africans out there about the state of play at the Master's Office, and in general, the functionality of the department, where it acts as a intermediary in terms of payment, of maintenance, and ultimately the accessibility of those who depend on those funds that must be paid out by the report. So, having said that, Chair, in addition to that, I must say that if one looks also at slides 30 onwards, and specifically the attempt of the department to speak to the strategies it has settled on regarding to overcome, as it puts it, underperformance, we want to give the benefit of the doubt that some of these might bear fruit in the near future, taking into consideration that the Director General, obviously, towards the end of the financial year in question, only took up office. But nonetheless, we must state it, a big worry that some of the issues that have been plaguing the department for 2-3 years now still is not addressed in a very real way. And in that sense, I must say that some of the strategies and interventions that is set out in slides 30 onwards are unfortunately very vague. So I would ask, therefore, Chair, with your indulgence, that we be afforded more detailed information, for example, around the audit action plan, and the plan to address those issues that had been plaguing the department in terms of audit findings, the issue of contract management and supply chain management, irregular expenditure and the way that the department deals with irregular expenditure. There is unfortunately a disconnect between what we've heard here today and what the Auditor General says, that what is happening. And therefore, I think we must ask even for a further briefing where we can see in a more tangible way whether the audit action plan is really being applied and has come to some fruition. Others have asked specific questions about the functionality of the state attorney's offices. From my side, I want to say that, of course, the functionality of the state attorney's offices will also be vital in addressing the whole issue around contingent liability, which is the other matter in respect of which the department is from year to year qualified in terms of its audit outcomes. And colleagues would recall, and I'm going to say it now to the Director General in a very direct manner, that in the past we've always received this explanation from the department that, yeah, but actually the Auditor General is a bit unfair because we can't foresee the department, or the state attorney can't foresee what is the type of contingent liabilities that we must build into our reporting, because it is, we're very much working with uncertainty. But the Auditor General, when it briefed us on Tuesday, said very clearly, but this is not the case. If we at the Auditor General ultimately can in an accurate way identify all of the contingent liabilities, it should be possible for the department to do the same. And this is also an aspect here where I think the briefing in respect of the strategies to become overcome underperformance has been lacking. And I do request through you that we get a more detailed report on how this issue specifically will be addressed. Then, Chair, I must say that also, in respect of certain issues, and others have talked about the impact of the pandemic on the functionality and the performance of the department, what I want to say, Chair, is that I find it unacceptable that, for example, in a COVID year, the audiovisual remand rollout with a target of 18 ultimately is now reported as a zero. One would have thought that in a COVID year, this is actually the type of target that would have been exceeded to ultimately enable our courts to deal with what they should do amidst COVID. And then linked to that is also the vagueness around the strategies to deal with the increased backlog role. I find it really unacceptable that we've had interactions with the department, with the minister, around this specific issue the moment it became very clear that COVID would have the effect of really the backlog role snowballing. And we were assured that very specific plans are in the process of being made as far back as July next year. And yet today, we sit again here today with a report which basically said we're now in the final stages of settling on a plan to address the backlog. So I want to ask through you, Chair, what then has been happening since July next year when we were assured as a committee that this is something that will be receiving top and urgent attention. And then lastly, Chair, in respect
Honourable Owen, can you repeat your last question?
Yes, so my last question, Chair, is about the backlog role and the plan to address the backlog cases. And what I said is that we as a committee had that very specific dedicated engagement with the minister and the department as far back as July last year, when we realized that the initial hard lockdown would have a very, very detrimental impact on the backlog role. And there we were assured that a specific team has been set up, a very detailed a plan is to be rolled out immediately to address this. But yet, if we look at the report today, it is quite clear that the department says we are about to settle on a plan as to how to address this backlog issues now very soon. So I don't understand whether we were then lied to July next year. as to this whole issue. And I think we need a detailed explanation of what is going on. And then my last question or comment, Chair, is about the legislative program of the department. In the past, we were always afforded during this briefing also some feedback as to the progress in respect of those matters that were envisaged to be forming part of the legislative program. And in this regard, it remains very worrying that at first we were always informed that the lower courts bill is in the final stages of completion, and that's a few years ago. And now it would seem that has just dropped off the radar. And it remains a worry because apart from the issues around the Magistrates Commission, which the Honourable Jayanti has already addressed, the lower courts bill will ultimately be a key piece of the puzzle to complete the transformation of our court system. I think we must be very worried that it would seem this is just never going to be finalized. And then in addition to that, I've gone through my notes, and I know this is quite possibly a question I should have asked the minister on Tuesday, but in addition to the lower courts bill issue, there's also the long outstanding matter of the final decision of policy on the model we will ultimately settle on regarding judicial governance. And the last report we as a committee had on this was that it reached cabinet in March 2019 already. And since then, there's also just been a complete silence around this matter. And I would like to request from the Director General, or if the Deputy Minister is still here, also an update as to where are we going with this. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Delmani Botrachans.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you very much to the Department of Justice for your presentation. I also take note. I take note that the DG was appointed into this post during the lockdown period, and also that there are positions that were appointed during that time, vacant positions. The presenter said that the vacancy rate has dropped to below the minimum of 10%. However, that does not prevent you from getting a qualified audit. So I'm still concerned about the vacancies, that if the vacancy rate does not allow you or assist you to achieve an unqualified audit. I have the documents from our own research unit here with the portfolio committee, and in one of the documents it says we were supposed to get a report. There were a number of reports we were supposed to have received by July 2021, and none of those reports have been received by us. So I would like to know that if these reports from the department that we were supposed to receive by July 2021, are they still in progress? Because I mean the financial year has already ended. And these reports are from the BRR reports of 2019 and 2020. So those reports are outstanding and we are now in 2021. I'm still very concerned about access to justice, particularly people with disabilities access to justice. And I would then like to know that in the department's previous APP, there was a target of 75 courts to be made compliant with strategies for universal access for people with disabilities. The report that we have right now says nothing about that. I am, this concerns me. I'm not going to name provinces, but I was contacted by DESA, a person needed to go to court, and the sign language interpreter provided at the court was, one can say, a learner interpreter. And so the deaf person couldn't, there was no communication, and the magistrate postponed the case. And then before the deaf person had to go back to court, they didn't know if an interpreter would be there or not. And I was asked to intervene, and I contacted the regional head, and they said, no, the interpreter will be there. So I asked DESA to be present in the court to observe the interpreter so that we can see that if the interpreter provided by the court is skilled or not. Unfortunately, the magistrate or the judge told the DESA staff to leave the room. So my question is, why would observers be said to leave the room? You know, the head of the regional court said, no, the judges are independent. I respect that, but access to justice for people with disabilities still matters. The sign language interpreter is not accessible and it's not considered as independent. So somebody has to be there, you know, because nobody in the court knows sign language. Nobody in the court knows if the interpreter is doing their job correctly or not. So I plead with the department, work with organizations that work with people with disabilities or deaf people, people who know South African Sign Language. Because, I mean, providing an interpreter who is in a level one class, there's no way that they can interpret the register or interpret at a level of court proceedings. Coming to condonement. The department says that they've submitted, have made submissions for condonement for 237 million rands. And I would like to know why are you making submissions for condonement? Does it mean that you will not be able to recover that money, that 237 million? And so how is that decision, how do you come to that decision that this particular amount has to be requested for a condonement? And then the business that is not VAT compliant and then recovering the money. So by the end of March 2021, I mean, it's been 6 months, have you been able to recover the money from that business that was not VAT compliant? In terms of ICT, I echo my previous colleagues. The cyber attack on the Department of Justice, we'd like to know that prior to this, I mean, technology has always been there, and technology will always be there. So what protection had the department put in place before the cyber attack, and what protection has been put in place after, you know, for example, firewalls and things? Do you have staff to monitor, you know, possibilities of cyber attacks and such things? The DG said at the beginning that there's not enough staff in the IT sector, but we have youth who are unemployed, who are skilled in IT, more skilled, more so than us, more so than any of us in this room, who are skilled with computers. Why can't they be appointed in the department and, you know, being used in the IT sector of the department? Is that not a possibility or a consideration? And then the court infrastructure, court maintenance and related matters. I would like to ask, well, I have visited a court in Malmesbury and the court burned down. It was in 2019 when it burned down. And I'm curious, that is that court part of the department's plans for renovation? Because nothing has been done about it yet and no rebuilding has been done. So I'd like to find out if it is on the department's plan for renovation. And in this week, we heard from the Department of Correctional Services that they've put in place consultants. I really actually don't want to talk about consultants, you know, using consultants to resolve things. But I mean, they have been qualified since 2015. So then I guess the department has seen some improvement by having consultants. Would this department then consider using consultants to turn the situation around, or do you feel that you'll be able to turn the situation around yourself? And then I have a question regarding the TCC centres. I will keep that for the NPA. And I think I'll leave it at that for now. If there's a second round, I might take that up. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Dennis Brettenbach.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, and good afternoon. I think by now it's almost to everybody. I've largely been covered by the questions and comments of my colleagues. I must just say at the outset, Mr. Chair, as a general remark, I'm left with a feeling of disquiet about this report. It appears to me that really serious issues are glossed over with very generalized language. So we acknowledge that there's a problem here, but we're putting measures in place to deal with it. And those generalities are just not helpful. It doesn't help to identify a problem and then not provide specifics about what is going to be done to fix the problem. Because next time they come back to report, the department will again drown us in generalities and will make it very hard for us to hold them to account on specific issues. So I'm left with the feeling that the type of language used in this report is sort of to say, you know, everything's okay, it's not really so bad. Yes, there are some problems, but, you know, we're dealing with them and there's nothing to worry about, which in fact is not the case. Of course, we know that the department is in serious trouble. It continues to a downward spiral and things are not getting fixed. And so this type of report where everything is just general is honestly not helpful. And I align myself with the comments of particularly Honourable Junkie in that regard. Then the IT system, I know a lot has been said about it, but I simply can't just leave it. You know, the attack was devastating. It destroyed the entire system. We don't know, still don't know, what the mitigation plan is going forward. We don't know why the department was dependent on contractors. There's no point in telling us that they were dependent on contractors. We need to know why they were dependent on contractors and what they're going to do about it. What specifically are they going to do about it? Not, you know, we'll fix it. It's now a general knowledge that there was on social media in the days and probably weeks running up to this ransomware attack, that there was information available on social media that such attacks were being planned. Was the department aware of this? And if not, why not? And what did they do in those, if they were aware of it, why, what did they do to try and mitigate such an attack? You know, when the DG makes comments like, you know, the system is old and defunct and this was always going to happen, it was just a matter of time. Well, that's deeply concerning. They have the Department of Justice upon which the material part of our society is reliant to take the casual attitude of this was always going to happen, it was just a matter